Welcome to Aromatic Chat, the podcast that introduces you to a registered, clinical, and certified aromatherapist around the world. Every other week, my amazing, incredible mother-in-law, Melissa, sits down with a different aromatherapist to learn about their aromatic journey and how they use the plants that God has given us in their lives and their businesses. Aromatic Chat is produced by Lemon Balm Coaching, and your host is Melissa. She is a master transformational coach and a registered aromatherapist.
Hey friends, welcome to podcast episode number 95, Aromatic Chat with Pam Conrad. Pam is a registered nurse and aromatherapist who specializes in women's health and mental health. She earned her advanced clinical aromatherapy certification and graduate in complementary therapies with nurses, doctors, and midwives in England and France. She has developed evidence-based curriculum in women's health aromatherapy, which is the foundation for multiple hospital nursing and midwifery educational programs. For 5 years, she practiced as the complementary alternative modality nurse consultant for a large hospital pharmacy, developing compounded therapeutic aromatherapy blends, sourcing evidence-based herbal supplements, and developing educational programs and materials for herbal indications, contraindications, and interactions. She's an international speaker, has presented her aromatherapy work in Canada, Chile, Japan, Ireland, England, and Mexico, and throughout the United States. She has paved the way for nurses and midwives worldwide, and she's here to share her aromatic journey. So let's get started. Pam, I am so glad that you said yes to being on the podcast because you've been doing this aromatherapy thing for a while, and I love to get the perspectives of people who've been around doing it and new people as well. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. I'm honored to be here.
The first thing I always love to do is just get your story. Like, you started doing aromatherapy over 20 years ago. What in the world brought you into it and has brought you to this point?
So for many years, from the time I first became a nurse, I kind of immediately, my first job was at Texas Heart Institute in Houston. And I went to Purdue and got my nursing degree and went down there, and I was shocked. This was early days of bypass surgery, and this was one of kind of the meccas of that. And right away, I was just shocked that we weren't talking anything about prevention and stress reduction. And it was early days of when those were being identified as risk factors. So I started hanging out at, you know, I was at the Heart Institute working as a nurse, and then I'd go to the health food stores. Just, I was self-taught. I just started reading herbals, nutritional guides. Really didn't know anything about aromatherapy, but that's the path that I started for. And I became a vegetarian 40 years ago and worked in a food co-op when I went back to Purdue. So I was learning all different kinds of kind of mind-body. It was back in the days of Dean Ornish when he was looking at the Mediterranean diet and mind-body, and then started studying herbal medicine. And I was just fascinated with all that. Prior to that, as a child, my father's a pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And my great-grandfather was a botanist and a pharmacist. And so it really is ancestral, like the way they practiced and then kind of coming to the combination of nursing and aromatherapy. And honestly, I really did pray for, where do I fit in nursing? How can I bring this preventative, complementary, all kind of words, holistic? These words have changed pretty dramatically over the last 30, 35 years. And I was on a task force in the IU Medical Center because I was one of those people. There were just like, oh, maybe 20 of us on campus, doctors, nurses, social workers, who were self-taught in some modality or another. And so we were starting to see people come into the emergency room from different cultures. And there weren't a lot of different cultures here in the Midwest. And so we were starting to see that. Well, along with that came herbals, different kind of remedies. And were they okay with our allopathic medicine, with our emergency cardiac medicines, with our surgeries, with our anesthesias, all those kinds of things. So that was our first task. Through that, Actually, the pastoral counselor of the hospital, his wife was a nurse practitioner, and she was trying to bring clinical aromatherapy to the med center, to bring the course. And she sent out 600 flyers, and one day it ended up on my desk. And it just, the timing just happened to be perfect. We were opening a new women's health center. I was asked to lead the integrative complementary therapy component of it, because they knew I had dabbled in those kind of things and I had a long history at this hospital. So I took the class. My boss paid for the class. And the minute I walked in, the minute, it was an old trauma center hospital. So nothing glamorous at all, not like the spa kind of hospitals.
Right.
And the instructor was waving a tissue with geranium oil on it. And it wasn't that I loved that smell so much, but I just had this feeling, this is it. And it was just like that. So it was a year and a half course that I took, Jane Buckle's course, and brought it into the Women's Health Center, the IU Women's Health Center of Excellence. When I finished the course at about a year and a half, we did research and we did a full body technique. And when I got done, they really didn't know, other than they gave me a budget and I was creating the music therapy and I was facilitating cancer support groups and I was doing all kinds of things, but they didn't know how the aromatherapy would fit with that, other than I could teach other nurses so that someday we'd figure out what to do with it and I could manage massage students. So everybody was trying, but nobody really, there were no role models. At that time, my husband was transferred to England. He's an aerospace engineer, and we were transferred over there as a family, which was just divine intervention, because the nurses and midwives had been doing clinical aromatherapy in OB and oncology for, at that point, since the 80s. And I went over there 2001. So I just went over, hit the ground running, and took every single class I possibly could from one end of the country to another. And interned for a year in Queen Mary's Women's Hospital in London with Denise Turan. And she really showed me, just by watching her private practice, and she supervised students from her university. So I saw how you bring traditional nursing and the aromatherapy together, and then started focusing on pregnancy and childbirth.
Wow.
So it's kind of a long story. And then I went to graduate school while I was over there, because I knew I needed to come back with an advanced degree in order to accomplish anything in the middle of America, really, in the middle of the Midwest. So I went to University of Westminster and studied complementary therapy studies, which was the umbrella over all that. So it was a dream come true. Honestly, it was. And with I knew that I was very, very, very blessed and that I needed to take it seriously and learn as much as I could so I could bring it back to those that weren't able to have that experience and bring them back the best that there was at that particular time. And I focused on the evidence base. There was a big study there at Oxford. So I went to Oxford and I worked with, and I was with the nurses and midwives there. I just wanted to, and I bought the package, brought it home, created curriculum, and started teaching nurses here.
Wow. So are you still focused on women's health now?
Yes.
Is that your, oh my gosh.
So I have been doing that pretty much. When I first got back, I'd gone to graduate school and I had been with Denise focusing on OB and midwifery. They don't really call it OB over there. And so that's what I really wanted to do. And I came back, and with American Holistic Nurses and Critical Care Nurses Association, I got my course endorsed and approved. And so then I was able to bring it in the hospital. So I really walked the professional evidence-based line, because I knew there was no other way to have it in the hospitals and have it approved to teach nurses and all the rest of that. But they weren't real comfortable doing that when I got back. So the first doors that opened were hospice.
Yes.
And I had studied oncology and hospice when I was in England as well. Not nearly to the degree that I did. I mean, OB is a little bit more complex. But whenever I could, I went to Bristol Cancer Center and I studied with the Macmillan nurses. And I went to some hospice care. So I had both of those. And when I came back, hospice for, I guess, kind of obvious reasons, they were willing to open the door to look at another care and comfort measure for their patients. So I started 4 hospice programs here before the OB started. And it always started with just one nurse who would just go, you know, she would have been there. She would have been a senior nurse. You know, she would have had the ear of the doctors and the administrators. And we would just, you know, I'd always have to show them the evidence, and they were comfortable with how we did it. And we just went with single oils, and that's kind of how it started. And then after a couple years of that, and I was teaching at the university, just building a reputation, then I was working at a pharmacy, and the pharmacist who ran the pharmacy, it was a hospital pharmacy, he had a very good relationship with the OB director. And they had known each other for 20 years. And so he introduced us. She was willing to let me come and teach her nurses. And we did the first in the U.S. OB aromatherapy program.
Wow.
So that was in 2008.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey friends, if you're an aromatherapist, here's something really important that you may not have been taught in aromatherapy school. Connecting with other professional aromatherapists is really important to the health of your practice. Why? Because our brains are designed for connection. Connection, team, clan, tribe, core group, no matter what you call it, it's about survival. When you are isolated, it's easy to become discouraged and feel like nothing you're doing really matters. But when you're connected and part of a larger group focused on the same goal, you're energized, and maybe you even feel invincible. Well, coming up September 26th through 28th, you have a chance to be a part of a community of aromatherapists at the Aromatics in Action International Conference, Embracing and Composing Sustainable Aromatics in Nashville, Tennessee, USA, brought to you by the Alliance of International Aromatherapists. The AIA is bringing together industry leaders and educators, as well as exhibitors, at their first post-pandemic in-person conference. There will also be on-demand sessions to add more learning opportunities and continuing education. I invite you to visit alliance-aromatherapist.org and sign up today. That's alliance-aromatherapist.org, or visit the link in the show notes and sign up today to join the AIA and be a part of the tribe.
So just so that I can get it straight, are you a midwife?
I'm a nurse. No, I'm not a midwife. Okay. I am not a midwife. And Denise Turan told me I'm an honorary midwife, but no, I'm not a midwife. I'm a nurse. And in Indiana I've been a nurse over 30 years. Until about 15 years ago, there really weren't midwives here. And now there are nurse midwives. Because, you know, very puritanical. And when I've gone to other countries, like in the UK, all of OB is done by midwives. So they don't have OB nurses. There's no such thing. So all that dimension of medical care is done by midwives. They're autonomous practitioners. And it's been forever. Like ours, you know, I mean, that's a whole long history, but ours wasn't like that. We're a complete medical model. Yeah. So I'm a nurse. And I specialize in OB aromatherapy.
Okay. So is safety and evidence-based practice in aromatherapy more important when we're talking about like obstetrics, pregnancy, midwifery?
100%. 100%. That if we just take the whole of aromatherapy and carve out subspecialties that need extra care, extra education, extra focus. Pregnancy is pretty much number one and tied for number one. So there are others. I mean, obviously there's cardiac conditions. Obviously there's ICU conditions. Obviously there's new infants and young children. But these are areas where you just have to be things on a dime. And you just can't be throwing blends with 8 to 13 different oils into people that are pregnant. And without, you know, you need to understand the developmental phases, what's going on with a woman's body, what's going on with the developing fetus. And when things start to turn, you know, do you have children?
I do. I have 4.
Okay. So you've been through this. And they're all different, and things change. Like mine were both emergent, mine were both preterm, mine were both in the NICU, like those kinds of things from a perfectly normal pregnancy that can change mm-hmm. like that. So the only way I was able to get it into the hospital was to have the evidence to prove that every single oil that we used had been studied, had been published. And I have followed when I was in England. I went to Oxford because I learned that the midwives at John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford, England, had done an 8-year study of 15,000 women in labor with aromatherapy.
Okay. Wow.
And so those midwives, they wanted caring comfort measures for the women in labor. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to see if aromatherapy could help with nausea, anxiety, pain, and contractions in dysfunctional labor. And so they had an aromatherapist come and teach them the oils. And at that time, they looked at whatever evidence was available to see what would be safe. They did it between 1% and 2%. They did a 6-month pilot study, and nothing bad happened to any woman or any baby. And they had over 50% effectiveness rating, only 1%, you know, negative side effects. And those were normal labor things. They couldn't say it was from the oils, like right. nausea, headache, those kind of things that oils can do to any of us. So after that, they were able to get funding and do an 8-year study.
Wow. All
the midwives had to be educated in aromatherapy. And they did an 8-year study of women in labor looking at the same things, and they used the same 10 oils. So I went, I studied their program. I studied with them. I bought the program. I brought it back. And it is the foundation of what I've taught for all these years, because it is time tested. It started in 1989. Mm. So since 1989, we've been doing the same thing. And we've never had a safety issue with a mom or a baby in all those years. So we have thousands now. And now we have more evidence. Now we have prenatal evidence we didn't before. Mm-hmm. And now we didn't have any postpartum evidence. So I was able to get a grant from AIA. I got the first grant to study postpartum anxiety and depression. So now we have prenatal evidence base and we have postpartum evidence base. And we just stay within that in our programs. And there just aren't any problems. Now, those that don't follow that and go overboard with their methods they use, or go out of kind of the range of the oils that are without looking at the safety or the amounts, or go with blends, mostly go with hearsay. Like, it was okay mm-hmm. for my neighbor, it was okay for my sister, it's okay for my right. pastor's wife, that kind of thing. Now we do have problems with both. So safety's huge. And so in both of my books, you can read about what's evidence-based, and we just follow that. So yeah.
I was actually just going to ask you about your books. I know that we actually read one for a book club.
That's right. That's right.
Yes. And what can you tell us about your books?
So after I published the research on postpartum depression and spoke at a few conferences, Singing Dragon Books contacted me. They did not have any evidence-based guidebooks for practitioners. So for midwives, for nurses, for aromatherapists, for doctors, they didn't have any. They had lots of nice, really nice aromatherapy books, but they weren't necessarily all evidence-based.
Right. So this is Women's Health Aromatherapy.
That's Women's Health Aromatherapy. This was published in 2019. So you can find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and booksellers all over the world. This book is divided, and it's small. I write small, practical books, okay? So this book is divided into 6 chapters, and I break down the oils and also the studies. Anyone can go and show, like the administrator or the physician or the woman, okay, see, it's been studied, and it was shown to be safe and effective at this amount in this manner. And then I have these little tables, these guides that people can just look at that have all based on the evidence. What is the condition? What is the oil? What are the methods? It's very simple. It's for everyone. My goal has always been evidence-based, to keep it safe, show what's effective, to make sure that it's at a level that you can, a nurse or a doctor or a midwife can get it into the hospital, and that every woman on the planet can buy the book themselves, read, if they can read, then they can do it themselves. So I didn't want it to be highfalutin with, you know, all kinds of like policies and procedures and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we definitely have followed those, but I want it to be very user-friendly, and the feedback and the reviews have been that it is. There's a whole chapter in PMS, and then there's a whole chapter in menopause. The sixth chapter is menstrual issues. So cramps, heavy bleeding, amenorrhea, no period, that kind of stuff. So that's how it's broken down. So if you're in that camp and not pregnant, there's a whole bunch of stuff for you. You know, you can be menopausal and care nothing about pregnancy, or you can be full on, you know, practicing with prenatal clients and you'll have what you want. So that came out 2019, still widely sold and widely used. And then they asked me if I had anything else. And they asked me, you know, with mental health being what it is, and I have a background in psychiatric nursing also, they asked me if I would write on a similar kind of book on mental health. So that's what this is. It focuses mainly, though, on the emotional mental health aspect and what's very unique about women. So what happens to our neurotransmitters and our hormones that affect our anxiety and affect our depression and that kind of stuff. It goes all the way from teen to postmenopause. And so a lot of our teenagers, and there's, I also in this one, because being a mother, you can probably relate to this, the saying of a mother's only as happy as her saddest child. So in the middle of this is a pediatric supplement. So over the years, pediatricians have contacted me. They've had, you know, kind of started with their patients were coming in and using oils, and the doctor knew nothing about oils. They weren't against them, but that's a risky business. You know, you have these little people, you have a postpartum mom, and you don't know anything about this, but the copious amounts people were using or right. the claims they were making. So they asked me, one pediatrician had me come to Dallas and to teach a group of doctors and a group of nurses and midwives about the OB and also pediatrics. So she did a private, I've had like three pediatricians do private consultations. So I've created kits for them, or, you know, the knowledge and the kind of the how-to and obviously the evidence base, you know, that's done that way. So in this book has a pediatric supplement because our kids are suffering. That's what that is. And was just published a couple late August.
First of all, just thank you for writing these books.
You're very welcome.
And as a Gen X, right? Like, we didn't talk about this stuff.
I know.
At all growing up. Women's mental health, you know, they're just having a nervous breakdown. That's right. All that was ever said.
Right.
And now with all of these things coming to light now,
right.
I'm just thank you for writing these books. Wow. What an incredible resource for women and men, because men need to understand their women.
It's so true. It's so true. And we mothers, I have a daughter and a son. Mm-hmm. And this, what I get asked at the couple of things I've spoken at thus far, you know, there'll be a handful of men in the audience where we have more men coming into the field, and kind of with, I'm not going to say irritation, but a little bit of being left out probably, like, what about men? I get asked. Mm-hmm. So number one, I hope that some man or starts to research that themselves, because for me, it's very natural. It's always been the fire that has burned inside of me, women, women's issues, women's health. And I'm not a man, so I don't know what it feels like inside. And I really think there's great value if we had a man talk about the men's issues. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there almost everything in this book, as far as dealing with anxiety, depression, panic, can be used for men. It's not that we have a whole different set of oils or a whole right. different amount. No, they don't have menstrual cycles. No, they don't have postpartum depression, but there is some evidence now about males' postpartum issues that, of course, you know, their life has changed dramatically too. So that's what I want to say, is that any man can look in here And if they really read the book and hear the background, my own personal background, and also like I've worked with my own children and boys and girls and love them equally, so they can use that easily. And also when it does come to the very specific female things, understand it a little bit better or help with their kids.
Wow. So you said your own words, you are on fire for women's issues. I mean, it's obvious just
forever.
Listening to you speak, but what are some of your other passions? What are some of the other things you enjoy doing?
I love art museums and I am a docent. When I was, I'm going to say late teens, early 20s, and maybe would travel or go to a museum, I would see women do, mostly women, some men doing the tours. And I would get so much out of it, so much more out of it. If they could kind of be the guide of this city or this building or this museum and just kind of highlight things, because these places are overwhelming. Like they're full of so many works. So I had the opportunity when I was taking care of my own mother. And I knew she was coming close to end of life, and I knew I would need something. So my own self-care, I kind of reached back. I had left my name on a list to be a docent. Anyway, I reached back and started my education. This was 10 years ago to be a docent. And it was like going to graduate school without doing a thesis at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. And it has been so life-giving. I absolutely love it. And I see actually a lot of parallels when we think about, because mental health and women's health, like I said, and we do tours a lot with children, just like tapping into your senses. And we can do that with aromatherapy. We can do that with music. We can do that with art. And when I work with people, you know, privately, I've interspersed all of those things along with exercise and diet and that kind of stuff. So I really love that. And we moved to Seattle for 2 years. And while I was gone and the pandemic and all that, there was quite a bit of upheaval in the museum. There's another museum here. It's one of the few Native American museums, Native American art museums in Indianapolis. We just, a gentleman here happened to have an amazing collection and built a museum.
Wow.
30 years ago. And so I became a docent there. So I do both of those. I volunteer at both of those. And the other thing I love is travel. I love the world and the people of the world. And
who is inspiring to you? Because I bet people are going to hear this episode, and especially nurses or midwives, and they're going to hear you and be really inspired. But who's inspiring you?
My greatest inspirations in aromatherapy have been, I was really called to the women's health piece of it. And there really wasn't any of that here. And I, like I said, by good fortune and divine intervention, we went to England where it was pretty well established. And I hunted the only book on the market at that time that was by a practitioner in a clinical setting was Denise Tyrann's. And she, in 2000, she published Aromatherapy, Pregnancy, and Childbirth. That was my favorite book of my life. Because I was new to this, and I went over there and I just read inside and out because I really needed the how-tos, but I needed that. And so ultimately, and pretty quickly, I found her. So I was able to go to London. It was like a 2-hour train ride, and there was a bus ride and a subway ride and a real journey to practice with her in that hospital for a year. The doors open when it's time. They needed somebody to fill that spot. I had a nursing degree. I was free because I couldn't make money over there. And I was newly qualified, certified in aromatherapy. And that's, it just worked. And so I was able to go there. So she and I are very close friends and colleagues. And she's a mentor. And she wrote the foreword to this book. And I've written the foreword to her books. And I just admire her greatly. And then Dr. Ethel Burns is a midwife, and she's the one that conducted, she and a team of midwives, but she was the main one that got it started. She conducted the 8-year study at Oxford. And so she also is a colleague, and I visited her and spent time with her and followed up with her. And she did that study, published that, and then she went to Italy and did another study on aromatherapy and childbirth with midwives there. That foundation, I mean, any of us can lay a foundation for the people that come after. That foundation is forever important in the field. How they ever got permission to do that with women in labor in the 1980s and 1990s, well, that would have never happened here. That would have never, ever happened here. And it is so valuable. And I just love both of those women and the teams and the other ones that I met. And they guided me, and I just respectfully listened and took in as much as I could. So I'm forever grateful. And it was really great for me. I've returned to England many times, and I was able to go back to Oxford when I did postpartum research, postpartum aromatherapy research that was published in 2012. And I don't remember what year, maybe 15, 16, I went back to England and spoke at Oxford to Dr. Burns and her team about the research. And it was just so satisfying, almost like a gift to say, this is what you started and I did something with it. Yeah. So they're my mentors.
I love the full circle.
Yeah.
And like you brought up earlier, the ancestry, right? Because these people, even though we're not, you know, genetically related to them, it's the ancestry of aromatherapy.
It absolutely is. When things really burn inside of you, like you're just so interested in something, be it art, be it music, be it a plant, a flower, be it an area of aromatherapy, be it a connection you have with a person, I would just advise anybody, just explore that for a while. That may be your calling. That may be your road, or it may be temporary and it's a building block for something else.
So what changes have you seen the most over the last 10 to 15 years in aromatherapy? Because you have been doing this for a while, right? And you seem very entrenched in it. Not just like, it's not just a hobby.
No, I mean, last 20 years, it's been the majority of my career.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, what have you seen over the past 10 to 15 years?
Right before we moved to England, I went to my first conference, and it was in Seattle, and it was NAHA. And that was just like going to the Mecca. It was one of the best conferences I've ever been to. Like all the smells, the people coming off the elevator that had written all these books, the exhibition hall had so much stuff in that, the tours and all the rest of it. It was just a feast of a place I had never traveled. And it was so exotic and so cool. At that time, there was the empirical evidence, those that had been doing it for a long time, hadn't necessarily done formal research, but they had a real depth of experience and knowledge and respect. Fast forward, I think it looks dramatically different now. It's almost unrecognizable. Back then, it was certainly challenging to be the only person in town who talked about this stuff. The reason, like, I just kind of stay the straight and narrow is because there was no other way. There was no other way to be allowed to speak and teach at a university, which I did at Indiana Purdue University, or get it into hospitals. I had to stick by what little evidence and the growing evidence. So we've gone to that for me to have to talk almost every single person into it, to an explosion of overuse and very limited education. It was almost overnight that it went from 0 to 1,000 of everybody was into oils. So it's just taken on its own life with these large companies, and without certainly in the first several years, I guess that's the idea of aromatherapy education, evidence base, or experience wasn't valued at all by that faction, if you will. So I think we have two different kind of universes. And so it's very different. It's very different. It's like from learning the individual oils, the single oils, how we would learn them and learn the therapeutic properties and learn the precautions and learn the chemistry and really know that single oil, to not really having respect for the single oil and just memorizing blend names, not even knowing that that's a blend name. I don't enjoy that part, to be honest. Having said that, because I want everybody to be safe and I want everybody to enjoy it. Having said that, I do believe in my heart of hearts that most everyone that practices any way that they do, any of it, you know, the earlier and the current, have good intentions. I really believe that. And I really believe that people are drawn to it because they want to help They want to help themselves. They want to help their family. They want to help their neighbors. They want to do something good. And that's beautiful. And I don't want to take anything away from that.
Excellent. So the mission of the podcast is to connect people.
Yes. Yes.
So how can people find you? How could they connect with you?
So the biggest ways nowadays, I have an Instagram account, Aromas for Healing, all words. And then I have a Facebook group called Aroma Tips for Nurses, Midwives, Doulas, and Therapists. And so all you have to do is ask to join. So that's about education and background and knowledge and whatever, you know, I can connect you to. So those are the two best ways. My website is only for if I'm doing a class and somebody, because all my books are and all that, they're sold on Amazon. They're not self-published, so I don't have any. So it's none of that. So my website is very old and probably won't be updated. So those two other ways, that Facebook group and the Instagram group, are the very best ways.
Okay. And I know you have a free gift for the listeners.
I absolutely do. So we have started, along with my book being published, Aromatherapy and Mental Health. I have logos that are, I have an English logo, Spanish, French, and Portuguese. All you have to do is email me, and if you tell me what you want, and I will send you your free logo. And all I ask in return is that you use that. You can use it on your website. You can use it in your business, in your practice, whatever. And the point of them, since the beginning of aromatherapy, mental health is our superpower. Every single one of us, if we're treating skincare, if we're treating children, if we're treating pregnancy, if we're treating anything, we have an effect on mental health. We're raising somebody's spirits, or we're calming them down. We're helping them sleep. We have slam dunk superpower with aromatherapy to help mental health. And it's what we've always done. We all do it. You don't have to be a nurse or a midwife or an aromatherapist, whoever, we all do it. And so advertising to the world that you're a part of that, that you do that, that that is what aromatherapy is, and you can put it anywhere you want to. So I will share those. I designed them and I paid for them and I'm giving them away free so that all around the world, people could see this logo. It's a mortar and pestle with lavender coming out of it. It has the green cross on it, like the pharmacies in Europe. And if we look at it and go, oh yeah, there it is again, just kind of a consciousness. Somebody sees that in a window or on a website and they start to be programmed to know, oh yes, aromatherapy does help mental health. And this will help all of us. Yeah. This will, yes. So that's what I'm giving away.
So as we close, I just always like to hand the floor back over to my guest in case there's anything you think I may have missed or you want to highlight something, or if you have just some closing words you'd like to share.
I just thank you very much for having me. And I love the work you're doing, and the work you're doing is teaching others as well.
Thank you.
Sharing the word, we all have a part to play, and nobody's part is more important than anybody else's part. We all have a part to play, and we can all contribute to this field. And just follow your own path, whatever that is, because maybe it's a path that nobody's been on before. We need it. We need so much help now, as it's not hard to see that, right? If you're somebody who does mission work or your backyard is a mission, it doesn't matter. Reach out, share, use it wherever your gifts are, and it will be appreciated.
Wow. Thank you so much, Pam.
Thank you. It was nice to spend this time with you.
Yes.
And I'll see you in September.
I know. I can't wait to see you at the conference. It's going to be so amazing.
Here's a virtual hug.
Oh, and we'll get to share a real one very soon.
Absolutely.
I have seen a lot of attention focused on Gen X recently. Reels asking Gen Xers, how are you? Or one of my favorites, when we were kids, we drank from a hose, followed up with the question, why did you drink from a hose? Didn't you have a sink in your house? These crack me up because Gen X was the first latchkey generation, the last pre-internet, pre-cell phone, and pre-social media generation. We were the Aquanet, Dippity-Doo, Jordache, Atari, drop off your kids at the mall on Friday night to go roller skating generation. We heard commercials like, this is your brain, and this is your brain on drugs, as well as, it's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your kids are? We had paper bags at the grocery store. We're told they were killing the environment. Switched to plastic. We're told they were killing the environment. So we're back to paper again. We had parents that were raised during the Depression and wanted to give us all the things that they never had. We didn't talk about sex. We didn't talk about periods or sexual abuse. Words like trauma were reserved for combat veterans or the severely mentally disturbed. Now, here we are, all grown up. We are resourceful and independent. We have become parents and grandparents and have hopefully learned from our mistakes. One thing most of us still struggle with is superhero syndrome. We've done everything on our own for so long that we're burnt out, overwhelmed, and hopeless. When you have been everything for everyone for most of your life, where do you turn? Can you even ask for help? Well, the simple answer is yes. But where do you go? Who can possibly understand everything that you were, are, and still want to be? There is still a lot of life left in us Gen Xers. We have a lot to give to this world, and we are tenacious enough to bring it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Pam Conrad. You can pick up her books on Amazon, and I'll include the links mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. Aromatic Chat is produced by Lemon Balm Coaching. I'm your host, Melissa, life and wellness coach for the broken, exhausted, hopeless, and overwhelmed. I'm a master transformational coach, registered aromatherapist, and certified body code practitioner. I love to read your reviews on Apple Podcasts, and I will see you next time with our next episode. Until then, peace, love, and aromatics. Hey friends, I want to introduce you to Blend Precisely, the software business toolkit for aromatherapists, herbalists, and formulators. When I first started out as a practitioner, I used spreadsheets, Word documents, my calculator, all of my safety books, and that was before I ever opened up a single bottle of essential oil to create a blend. Seriously, it took at least 20 to 30 minutes for every single blend that I made for my clients or my family. Whether you're a seasoned practitioner or you're just starting out, Blend Precisely will take the guessing out of the safety issues and let you focus on creating beautiful blends with ease. No more using multiple different programs to get your blends ready to go safely and effectively. Everything is calculated for you inside Blend Precisely. Dilution, percentages, chakras, perfumery notes, pricing, milliliters, ounces, grams, and more. Blend Precisely incorporates Tisserand's safety information so you never have a question again. There's no more guessing. One toolkit for everything. The best part about Blend Precisely is that it's not just a program that you sign up to use and then have no support. There is constant support from the creators, Katrin and Seth Burkholz. They have videos every week on their Facebook page, YouTube channel, and they even have a Facebook group for members of their community. I want you to know that Blend Precisely has a 14-day free trial. I suggest that you sign up for the trial, pull out some of your favorite blends and input them into the program and see what happens. Maybe even create a few new ones. Maybe even create some stock blends and see how Blend Precisely can support you in your aromatic life and business. I'm sharing with you my affiliate link to try out Blend Precisely risk-free for 14 days. Just click on the link to check out the software business toolkit for aromatherapists, herbalists, and formulators. And then use this toolkit to blend precisely.